And on today's Windy City CareerCast, Coleman Domingo and I talk about New York City and the holiday season. There is no place more romantic in the world, no place more bustling. Also, he's had another big birthday and big Thanksgiving holiday. All of us are heading into the holiday season, and do you do your shopping early? And did Rosie make a splash or dive on her big variety show, Rosie Live, this past week? Plus, Richard Knight Jr. with a Night at the Movies Minute and some news and much, much more. It's a really great show coming to you from me and Coleman.
Windy City Queercast.
Gays and lesbians are all the rage.
We're here and we're queer.
Windy City Queercast.
Windy City Queercast.
Windy City Queercast.
Windy City Queercast.
We are talking mega gay.
Ooh, I like that.
I'm Coleman Domingo.
I'm Amy Matheny.
This Queercast is brought to you in part by
Bud Light. Bud Light keeps it coming.
American Airlines, offering the GLBT community exciting vacation packages online at aa.com/rainbow.
And by Broadway in Chicago. For the hottest tickets in town, visit BroadwayInChicago.com.
Listening to the Windy City CareerCast show number 266. I'm Amy Matheny.
And I'm Coleman Domingo from New York City.
Yes, you are, baby. Happy Turkey Day, belated.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
And happy belated birthday.
Yes, I'm 22 years old.
You are so legal now.
Exactly. I'm really legal now.
Really legal. So tell me about your Thanksgiving. What did you do?
Thanksgiving was great. I went to Philadelphia and spent it with I had one of my best friends hosted my family. So my entire family, like my immediate family, my brother, my sister and their kids. And it was with my best friend's family and her husband's family. And so it was about 60 people for Thanksgiving.
Wow.
60. Yeah, pretty big. So it was great. We had a great time. It was good.
What was your favorite food item that you had?
My favorite food item that I had was probably the apple pie. That dessert. yeah, it was apple pie.
Now, is that normal that you do a big 60-person Thanksgiving every year?
It is. It's changed a lot. Like, you know, since, you know, like, as you know, that like I lost my parents a couple years ago. So the idea of that tradition has been sort of, it's done. So last year, actually, Raul and I went to South Beach, Miami. So
we had a
just the two of us in South Beach. That was a whole lot of fun. And we went to the Ritz-Carlton and had a fabulous, fabulous dinner. Yeah. So every year, a different new tradition. This year, it was 60 black people.
Wow. Did Raul go with you?
A few white. Raul did go to as well. You know, he's an honorary black, growing up.
So now, what did you do for your birthday? As you turn 22, do you have traditions and certain people you like to get together with in New York?
You know, I just like to, like, I like to do a very kind of small scale. Basically, today I just went to brunch. I had a bunch of friends. We went to brunch at Paris Commune. You know, go to pariscommune.net. Great food, great company, great times. So we went there, and that was actually a really sweet little brunch just to get people together and just some loved ones together and just talk and laugh and have some good food. That is a perfect birthday for me, and that's it. That's all I need. And then I actually went out and spent some money on some shoes and bought some nice, shiny shoes.
Some money on some shoes. Well, obviously, everybody just experienced the big weekend of holiday shopping which is the big madness over Thanksgiving. Are you a big person to shop that
weekend? I've never been, and I've never understood why people get so insane, like trampling people. You know, as we all know and heard on the news, like someone has been trampled and killed. I mean, it makes no sense to me. It's like, yeah, it's a discount, but come on. Lives lost, really? That's ridiculous.
Yeah.
For a sale item.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like they really, really, I think people get just too caught up in like, I gotta get that one gift that's on sale. It's like, no, you don't. Relax. We're in a recession. Yeah. You know?
Yeah. Yeah, the Chicago Tribune said, you know that things are bad when Oprah doesn't have her favorite thing show and says, you know, I'm going to teach you how to make shit out of paper mache and ball jars for Christmas this year. Even those 100 people are feeling the recession in her audience who are like, they're shit, like, I'm not scoring the big refrigerator with the plasma on the door.
You know, they're actually pissed off, probably. I'm sure they're so pissed off at Oprah right now.
Oh, I'm sure they are.
I'm sure you pan to the studio audience and they're all like looking so glum and pissed off.
Oh, I was so laughing. I was like, yes, last year they got televisions with plasma televisions in the refrigerator door. And today they learned how to make out of a plastic baggie some little ice cream cone looking hot cocoa things. I was like,
Oprah's that's wild. Oprah should probably just say, today we're giving out self-pity and sarcasm. Yay!
There you go. Yay!
Yeah. Oh, everybody get dumb! Yes.
Oh my gosh. But you know, I have to tell you that one of my favorite holiday, like Thanksgiving to Christmas memories, a number of them are in New York. I mean, you live in one of the most amazing cities I've ever been to during the holiday season with the Rockefeller Center tree and the ice skating and all of just the shopping. And there's just such a great energy. Did you feel it shift kind of this week?
I think so. I think it did feel a little shift. I mean, I really do. I feel like, well, first of all, we just get flooded with tourists. And that's actually, you know, it's actually a great thing, revenue for the city. And it actually brings, you know, people come here with wide eyes and it's beautiful. You see people just experiencing New York for the first time. So I think if you are not it's nice when your eyes are open being a New Yorker and you can actually experience New York again through their eyes. And so if you're open to that, it can be a really beautiful time of year. Otherwise, it can be a huge annoyance.
Yeah. Come on, you don't have to feel the love. You can go, I hate this fucking time of year. All the tourists are in town. Everybody's coming in from the boroughs. They're all walking down our streets and clogging our arteries.
Or you just got to go with it. And I choose to go with it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. And it is a really beautiful time of year right now. It really is. And you feel it everywhere, you know? Yeah, I don't know why, but I'm actually getting excited knowing that Christmas decorations are going up this year. Something about that. And I think because I feel like the country feels more hopeful, you know, with our new president and such. And I think there's just a sense of hope and goodwill and hopefully that keeps extending throughout the holiday season.
Well, I want to talk about that. I want to talk about extending hope with you when we come back. We've got such a great show to have you on just to kind of kick off this month of December. You know, it's World AIDS Day, December 1st here. And I went to a great movie that inspired me this weekend, which I hope everybody has gone out to see. And we're going to talk about that. But let me tell you what's going on in the news. And we'll be back with Coleman Domingo on the Queercast.
Bud Light presents Real Men of Genius.
Real Men of Genius.
Today we salute you, Mr. T-Shirt Launcher Inventor.
Mr. T-Shirt Launcher Inventor.
Not satisfied with standard souvenir distribution, you created a device with enough kick to dislocate a mascot's shoulder.
Someone get a stretcher.
Courtside, luxury box, upper deck. Your high-powered cotton cannon makes every section the nosebleed section.
Hit the deck!
So simple, anyone can operate it. After a background check, a training course, and a 5-day waiting period.
It only shoots T-shirts.
So crack open an ice-cold Bud Light, marksman of the mezzanine, because we know you'll give us the shirt off your back at 180 feet per second.
Mr. T-Shirt Launcher Inventor.
Bud Light Beer, Anheuser-Busch, St. Louis, Missouri.
I'm Kirk Williamson.
I'm Amy Matheny.
And this is The Week in News.
In a landmark decision, Miami-Dade, Florida Circuit Judge Cindy Letterman ruled on November 25th that gay foster father Frank Martin Gill can adopt the two brothers he has fostered for 4 years. The ruling flies in the face of Florida's gay adoption statutory ban, which Letterman ruled has no rational base. However, the state allows gays and lesbians to be foster parents.
In Canada, Marriage Commissioner Orville Nichols is suing the government of Saskatchewan after he was fined $2,500 for refusing to marry a same-sex couple. Nichols' attorney said that the situation can be remedied by letting commissioners pass on marrying gay couples if they feel the ceremony conflicts with their religious beliefs. The case will be heard in Prince Albert December 23rd.
Former U.S. Speaker of the House Newt Gingrich has once again sparked controversy, this time with a statement about gays. Gingrich said, "I think there is a gay and secular fascism in this country that wants to impose its will on the rest of us, is prepared to use violence, to use harassment," Gingrich said on the Fox show The O'Reilly Factor. Gingrich allegedly added, "You have to confront the reality that these secular extremists are determined to impose on you acceptance of a series of values that are antithetical. They're opposite of what you're taught in Sunday school."
In London, an English constable who circulated anti-gay emails has been fired. Graham Cogman, 49, accused the Norfolk police of promoting gay rights over religious beliefs and called homosexuality sinful.
On December 10th, which is International Human Rights Day, GLBT individuals are being urged to call in gay to work during what has been dubbed Day Without a Gay. There is more info on the site daywithoutagay.org.
In California, some minority groups wonder if their rights could be limited if Proposition 8 is allowed to stand. Legal authorities have noted that the measure, which passed November 4th and overturned the California Supreme Court's legalization of same-sex marriage, is groundbreaking in that it limits the court's ability to protect minorities.
In a British courtroom, Norwegian model escort Audun Carlsen, age 29, said under oath that the 80s singer Boy George beat him with a chain and handcuffed him to a wall in 2007. Carlsen met Boy George online and agreed to a nude photo shoot. After that shoot, the singer emailed Carlsen, accusing him of hacking into his computer. However, they agreed on a second shoot, which is when the alleged assault occurred. Carlsen said that he managed to escape in only his underwear.
Nikki Blonsky, who achieved fame after starring in the film version of Hairspray, said that she has a harder time trusting people after making headlines for fighting with America's Next Top Model, Bianca Golden, in an airport. Blonsky will be seen on TV soon when she guests on the January 8th episode of Ugly Betty. And that's the weekend news brought to you by Windy City Times.
Got something to say? Call us today. 312-21-BE-GAY. So, Coleman, have you had an opportunity to see Milk yet?
I saw Milk the day before Thanksgiving on opening day.
Oh.
And boy, isn't that a beautiful piece of art?
I hope it's going to be Gus Van Sant's legacy. I mean, of like his greatest film ever.
Absolutely. It should be. It really should be. And I think Sean Penn and Josh Brolin as well. I mean, they were incredible performances. And I felt like the movie theater, like everyone in the theater, and I saw it in Chelsea in an afternoon, and I was sitting with Raul and a couple of my good friends, Ari Gold. I'm sure you know Ari Gold, then an out recording artist, and my friend Chad Goodridge. And we all sat there, and we were just wrecked. I mean, there's tears, and there's just emotion. And it just made you feel like you were part of something special watching it. And being a part of it, but also living in the times that we live now and feeling like that we have still more work to do.
And yeah. I mean, I think for people who don't know, I mean, if you're younger and you're listening to this podcast, you know, Harvey Milk was the first openly gay city councilman in city assemblyman, I think is his actual title, in San Francisco. And he was elected around, I think it was 1976.
78 actually.
Was he in 78? And 78. He was assassinated in City Hall during broad daylight at around noon. Just
same week of the Jonestown Massacre.
Same week of the Jonestown Massacre. Harvey Milk and the mayor of San Francisco, George Moscone, were both assassinated in City Hall by a fellow city councilman, Dan White, who was a conservative Irish Catholic San Franciscan. And Sean Penn plays Harvey Milk, who was just this. What I loved about the story was it was so closely aligned to his trajectory of just a man at 40 years old going, I haven't really done anything with my life, a willingness to kind of do something with his life. And then everything just seemed to lined up. Everything lined up to put him in this place, in this moment, in this time, you know?
Yeah.
And what I thought was so powerful is we had just done a reading for the 30th anniversary of Jonestown.
Yeah. You
know, it was just a few days ago. It was the anniversary of Harvey Milk and George Moscone's assassination. You know, that it's 30 years. And you mentioned people being out with Christmas and shopping and the holidays and this feeling of hope that has resurged. And it was so interesting to me. I didn't even think about this. That Harvey Milk's platform was, you got to give them hope. You know, that was his one of his catch phrases. You got to give them hope. And and that we just have been on this enormous campaign with Barack Obama of hope and that uniting people. Did that hit you when you're watching the film?
Absolutely. I think it touched me in so many ways. Just, you know, especially as an out performer myself, it just made me feel like, wow, I have a I mean, this is just strong legacy, but also I used to live in San Francisco as well. So there's some nostalgia for me, but also the energy of the place of like knowing that all things are possible and how to not give up. So that message was just so inspiring and just knowing, especially with like Prop 8, just, you know, what went down with that and how we still have much more work to do and how we can still galvanize and come together and make a difference, you know, and it's our turn to step up.
Well, and interesting that 30 years ago, they were fighting Prop 6, also in California, which you will see in the reflected in the movie. What did you think of Sean Penn?
Sean Penn is, I think, one of the rare actors that slips so seamlessly into a character. I didn't even recognize him anymore. It wasn't Sean Penn. You know, some actors, you know, it's like, you know, Nicole Kidman, she puts on a prosthetic nose, but you're like, oh, that's Nicole Kidman now. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But, you know, I think Sean Penn is just... He truly does become, and he loves the character so much, with the human beings that he's portraying, that he just lights up and just, you know.
Well, I went on an afternoon. It sounds like you went on opening, but the theaters were packed. The 1:30 film was packed. The 2:30 film that I was in. It's only playing on two screens here in the city right now. It's in a limited showing. But you know, we walked out, and I told Kelly. I said, this really continues to show with Brokeback Mountain and Milk that these films will be very commercially successful to mainstream audiences. I felt like it was another thing that showed that our stories are, you know, are marketable and engaging and can kind of speak to everybody, because our audience was not entirely gay at all.
Right. But, you know, it's funny because I still have a little bit of the cynic inside me, and I'll tell you why. Because I question and I wonder how popular this film would be if it were cast with an openly gay, like someone Greg Parotti, who actually looks like Harvey Milk as well. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like what would that, would it ghettoize the film, or would it become, you know what I mean? Or what, you know what I mean? Cause I think we just have this thing in our society. It's like, you know, watching a straight man play gay. And we've seen it so many times, and not saying that, not to discount Sean Penn's work, but it's like, were there ever any options of like casting an openly gay actor?
No, I mean, I think that obviously these stories get seen by more people when there is somebody of name in it. You know, here in just a few weeks, we're going to have Meryl Streep launching Doubt, which Cherry Jones, openly lesbian, not well known maybe to mainstream audiences. She's going to be here in a few weeks when 24, when she's the new president on 24, but definitely known in the theatrical world, you know, went on, Meryl Streep went on to play the role and will probably get an Oscar nomination. You know, and I don't think that really had anything to do with sexuality, but how does a film get made? You know, what are the marquee names that get a film made? And Kelly mentioned that too. And I thought when we were walking out, I thought, God, they just seem so comfortable with being gay. I mean, I thought that was really, I thought James Franco, who's such a cutie, and the guy from E Tu Mama Tambien, the, I can't remember
his
name.
It's true. And it's interesting because they were all straight men playing gay. But then you have the gay man, which I thought was very interesting. The gay man, Dennis O'Hare, playing straight. I thought it was very fascinating.
He was a conservative Christian, a type of Briggs. He played Senator Briggs. You know, it's really a compelling movie. I hope people will go out. And I
yes, absolutely.
I was sitting with some older gay people, not older, but I mean like my age and a little older, who were like, "Wow, that's so fascinating, Twinkie defense. I didn't know about that." And and I thought, well, wow, if you don't know about it, then these younger generations of queer people going to see this movie, and even straight people will really get to hear a magnificent story. And it is a very, very beautiful movie. I thought it was gorgeous, and I thought for just kind of the love that you felt of this man, and you felt the movement. And the other thing that he echoed too was how he wasn't winning, that the movement, that he was, that it, the movement was the thing. And I also thought that echoed Barack Obama, you know, in Chicago and Grant Park on election night, when he basically said, you know, "I'm not the winner here. You're the winner here.
Yeah.
And,
Very,
very interesting, you know, because Milk was a community organizer.
Absolutely. Exactly.
Which is quite compelling, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
I'm
always thrilled when, you know, a movie comes out during this holiday season, because this is normally when we get the good movies, to me.
Yes, really exactly. Yeah, exactly.
Movies that aren't entirely shoot 'em up and blow 'em up, and I can enjoy those too. But it's a good way to kick off the season. And I hope everybody goes out and sees it, because I think the more money and the more dollars that we can show supporting this film during the holidays, that echoes in Hollywood, you know?
Absolutely, absolutely.
Cash is king.
They need to see those numbers so we can have more films like that.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Absolutely. It's true. Well, Kelly and I have been to see a lot of theater lately, and there's so much going on in the theater scene here in Chicago. We're going to take a break and tell you what's going on in the theater, and we'll be back after this.
Hello, this is Mary Testa.
And Jackie Hoffman.
From the Broadway musical smash Xanadu. And we have something very important we need to talk to you about.
Happiness.
Speak the truth, Sister Jackie.
Are you content with your life? Are you frustrated? Do you come home at the end of the day and go, "What the hell was that about?"
If so, and we think you might, then you could use a laugh.
A good one, or two.
Or a bazillion. And we know just where you can get them.
At Xanadu.
People, it's the biggest surprise hit in Broadway history, with an adorable love story, fabulous songs, inspired hilarity, all wrapped up in a sweet 90 minutes.
I love that part. You're home in time for Top Chef.
Oh, and if you think we're that crappy 80s movie, think again.
Please, the critics are gaga for this thing. The New Yorker actually called us ridiculously brilliant. I do not lie.
So it's not like we're therapists or anything, but if you want to get happy, you could take pills, or you could come and see Xanadu.
For tickets to Xanadu, visit BroadwayInChicago.com.
Culture Club. Culture Club. Culture Club. Theater.
Music.
Dance.
Art.
Performance.
Provocative.
Hilarious.
Exciting.
Queer.
Innovative.
Campy.
Edgy.
Original.
Get some culture in your life.
Join the club.
For the week of December 1st, 2008, you are in Chicago's Culture Club. The Chicago holiday tradition is back. American Theater Company's celebrated ensemble lovingly presents It's a Wonderful Life, the radio play, adapted from the film by Frank Capra. It's the classic story as a period radio play, complete with commercial breaks and live Foley sound effects, playing now through December 28th. For tickets, visit www.atcweb.org.
Remy Bumpo Theater Company presents The Marriage of Figaro, now playing through January 4th at the Greenhouse Theater Center. Five stars, says Time Out Chicago. A top-to-bottom delight whose message is nestled in an abundance of screwball craft. Don't miss The Marriage of Figaro and a new adaptation. For more information, visit remybumpo.org.
Meet Edith and Little Edie Beale, Jackie O's most scandalous relatives, in the Tony Award-winning smash hit musical, Grey Gardens, starring Hollis Resnick. This fall's most anticipated production follows the pair's fall from high society into the squalor of their infamous East Hampton home. Grey Gardens is playing through December 28th. For more, visit northlight.org.
Don't miss the hilarious comedy Don't Dress for Dinner, starring Burn Notice star Jeffrey Donovan and Patricia Callenber, formerly of TV's Sisters. Play now at the Royal George Theater. For tickets to Don't Dress for Dinner, go online at don'tdressfordinner.com.
Signal Ensemble Theater continues its sixth season with 6 Degrees of Separation, running now until December 20th at Wicker Park's Chopin Theater. A comic tragedy, 6 Degrees of Separation follows a young homeless man creating a web of confusion and tragedy as he enters a family's life, exploring that everybody on this planet is separated by only 6 other people. Visit SignalEnsemble.com for more. And for more Culture Club, visit WindyCityTimes.com.
Hi, I'm Amy Ray, and you're listening to the Windy City Queercast.
Let's go to the movies anyway and see.
I'm Richard Knight Jr. with another Night at the Movies Minute. Slumdog Millionaire, the latest film from director Danny Boyle, is being talked about as the indie release of the year. This year's Juno or Little Miss Sunshine, and I am happy to chime in with the hosannas being raised in its honor. The film is a clever variation on the classic underdog story, with major elements of the Cain and Abel story and an eye-opening travelogue to boot thrown in. Set in India, the movie follows the exploits of the innocent Jamal, his wised-up know-it-all brother Salim, and Jamal's efforts to reunite with the beautiful Atika, their beautiful fellow slumdog, like she's a lady slumdog, I guess, who Jamal holds an unshakable torch for. The story begins on the eve before the teenage Jamal is scheduled to answer the final question on the Indian TV version of Who Wants to Be a Millionaire. Not believing that an uneducated slum rat could possibly have known so many answers and climbed almost to the top of the game show jackpot, the show's host has him arrested as Jamal is leaving the television studio. Tortured and interrogated, nothing shakes Jamal's adamant claim that he's not cheating. As the movie progresses, via flashback, we are shown the amazing coincidences by which Jamal has come to intimately know the answers to the improbable questions. Boyle's film is impossibly rich, stuffed with unforgettable scenes and characters, and serves as both a very satisfying old-fashioned story and a fascinating cultural and historical lesson as well, all of which help make Slumdog Millionaire one of the most entertaining films of the year. I'm Richard Knight Jr., and that's your Night at the Movies Minute.
And everybody, next in the next Queercast, Deb Pierce with me here from Toronto. They obviously don't celebrate Thanksgiving at the same time we do. They celebrate it back in October. But we're going to talk with her about Canadians and the holiday season and much, much more. She'll be down here for Gays Got Talent on January 10th. She's coming for the big finals. And we have an event this week at Crew up in Uptown. I hope you all come. It's always a great time, filled house. They make great food, and obviously the cocktails and beer are flowing. And then we'll be at Atmosphere on December the 10th. So two more opportunities to come up and show off your talents. Hey, do you have any stupid human tricks, Coleman? I mean, we obviously know you're an actor. We obviously know you're a singer. I know you can boogie. But if is there a weird talent we don't know you have?
I don't. I wish I did. I wish I could do something really weird, like with my tongue or like with my earlobes or something. I have no idea.
I always think of the stupid human trick with my tongue too, as for at first. So that means we're kindred.
Yeah, exactly. See,
I keep experiencing like the tongue thing.
You're my Bichert.
You're Bichert. I love it. So, you know, Rosie started her big variety show this past week.
I know.
I watched it. Bomb.
I thought it was horrible.
It was so bad. Now, here you are. I mean, Rosie's one of your producers, right? On Big Gay Sketch Show.
Yeah, she's my executive producer.
You guys on, as opposed to trying to be all queer herself. But
it was so weird.
What was she missing? What just made it fall?
Everything. The writing was terrible.
Yep.
I think she was trying to do much, and I think, I don't know, I think she's got to do more in terms of, I have no idea, okay, I hope she doesn't hear this because, you know, she's my boss and all, but no, I just feel like she, you know, it's almost like, I think the public still has an image in their head of her in a way, and it's been marred in some way by, you know, the things with Donald Trump or whatever, I'm not sure, but I don't know, I guess, I think it just could have been stronger when it came to the writing, because I think it was a great idea in many ways, but somehow something fell flat, and I'm not sure exactly what it was. But it seemed like it was trying to tackle a lot of things. But I understand where she was coming from, you know, in the first place, you know, and trying to revive that variety show.
But I didn't know who she wanted her audience to be.
Yes, I think that's exactly what it was.
She should really, if she's going to go for the blue hairs and the grays, gays, the grays and the gays, then go for the grays and the gays, you know? And if anybody else gets on board, then groovy. But I just felt like it was a mess. It was kind of all over the place, and the writing wasn't that funny and at all. I just thought she was so much better than that. It didn't have a through line. It needed a thread.
I would have just loved for her. I love when you just watch her just go, when she just speaks off the cuff. Yeah. I just love it. And I feel like there were so many restrictions in a way to keep it, you know, whatever. Even if she wants to do a family show, which is great, mm-hmm. and hush and support she has a family. Mm-hmm. I just want her to go further there and go forward trying to get the, you know what I mean? The more alternative families, you know, mm-hmm. like this is something for alternative families, you know, in whatever way, shape and form that everyone will find their way into. I think, maybe going that route. I have no idea really, but, I was hoping, you know, I think people watch it. Like I watched in such hope that it was going to be great. I had so many friends who watched it because, you know, because we love Rosie and we want it to be, we got her back because, you know, she's got our back, you know,
and we want her to succeed. I kind of felt like she should have had, I mean, she either needed to do, I felt like she needed to have somebody to riff off of, and that she should have had one person through that whole show that would have popped into sketches with her, that even if she went off and talked to the different acts, that would have been interesting. But maybe she should have had, like, you know, like the tap dancers. She could have had a moment where it was like, these are people you don't know. Like, I want to introduce you to them. You know,
what I would have thought would have been, what I would have thought would have been kind of cool if she took the variety show format and really just kicked it in its ass. Yeah. Like if she came out not in a spangly outfit, but if she came out like just the way Rosie naturally dresses, you know what I mean? Just like kind of chill, and the way she just like had her rapport, but just update it in a way, just like really kick the variety show format in its ass in a good way, you know? Yeah. Just liven it all up and actually just like speak more off the cuff. I mean, you're live. Speak more off the cuff, you know, have a good time. I wanted her to have more of a good time.
Yeah.
You know, and I felt like she was kind of boxed in, and the whole format was kind of boxed in. Even, you know, everyone in their sketches and such, it just seemed too well planned and well thought out.
Yeah.
And I would have liked for it to have been, I think it should have just been more, you said it was a mess, but I feel like it could have been more of a mess, but a fun mess.
No,
you know?
I agree with that. I guess mess is not the right thing. It felt like a patchwork quilt that nothing fit into the next thing. Yeah, and so, you know, I didn't know what her point of view was. Like, what's your point of view, Rosie? Like, my point of view is, like, I love presenting, you know, how even when she had her Broadway moment on her talk show, it was kind of like, I saw this show. You don't know about it. You need to come to New York and see it. And it had that enthusiasm of her presenting like Broadway cast.
Absolutely.
And if she brought that because
that's what she has. She's the most enthusiastic over when it comes to Broadway and live performances. And I think her just having, I wanted to see that part of her again.
Yeah.
Because, you know, she gets people excited about that.
Right.
And I felt like it was just, everything was more formulaic in a way.
We're going to have these spinning people now. Now we're going to have these two tap twins. And it didn't have
her personal connection to it. Like, she found these people. She saw this.
Right.
And she believed in it. And that's what we respond to. So
we're going to watch her try to spin, or some audience members try to spin.
Yeah, that'd be good. That'd be so
really
great.
Good
that'd
spinners,
be awesome.
You know, like, watch her hula hoop with four hula hoops.
Yeah.
And then have the pros really do it, and then impress, and then take over. You know, I think
I have hopes that she's going to find another format of something, and she's going to come back with something. You know, she's figuring this out. You know what I mean? She's so smart. She's smart and savvy.
Like every week, or is this just a one-time thing?
I think this was it was going to try to be like a every so often kind of thing. Like, you know what I mean? Like a holiday special or something.
Yeah.
But I think it's just like, you know, about her coming back, you know, reformatting it and really doing what her heart truly wants her to do. You know what I mean? I think it could be something special.
So what is your heart wanting to do? What's next on the horizon for Coleman?
Next for me is if anyone's in New Haven, Connecticut, I'll be at the Long Wharf Theater.
Oh, yeah.
Doing the world premiere of an Athel Fugard play called Coming Home. Yeah.
Coming Home?
Yeah, it's called Coming Home.
And it's new?
It's new. It's a new Athel Fugard. Isn't that crazy? Isn't that crazy?
Wow. He wrote My Children, My Africa.
Yeah, My Children, My Africa. Yeah, okay. Master Harold and the Boys.
Master Harold
he wrote
and the Boys.
Valley Song, and this is sort of a companion piece to Valley Song.
Wow.
And it's a beautiful story about a young girl coming home from Cape Town after she left years before. Her dreams were kind of deferred. She's HIV positive, and she's got an 8-year-old son. It sounds really depressing, but it's actually really hopeful, actually.
Yeah.
But and I play the guy who she marries, this guy Alfred, who's sort of the town idiot. So and they have they form this relationship about people who need each other in times of despair. And so there's hope through that, you know? Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I'll be up there until like February, 9th or something like that.
When
so
do you leave?
If anybody's in New Haven, come on up.
When do you leave?
I leave next week. I leave next Monday, the 8th.
Next Monday, the 8th. Well, we will wish you well on that and probably talk to you at some point from from the theater, from Long Wharf.
Yes.
And we just went to go see Lynn Nottage's new play, Ruined, here at the Goodman the other night. And
how was it? That was directed by one of my good friends, Kate Worski. Yeah.
Yeah. It's a beautiful play. About a story that people don't get to hear very often. And I loved how, obviously I love when Lynn has performed that, you obviously get people of color into the theater. And I also love that there were a lot of queer women there, though there are no queer themes at all in the play. But I think just when you're talking about, it's about women in the Congo and obviously in present day and the conditions of their lives. And it also sounds like, oh God, you know, so dark and depressing, but it's also a very beautiful play. And there's a lot of hope and laughter and, a spirit of a people and especially of these women. So if you get an opportunity, I think that's playing at the Goodman just for the next couple of weeks as well. But I always enjoy her work. I'm glad that a woman and a woman of color is being produced on main stages around the U.S. now. So that's exciting.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, Coleman, go do a little shopping besides a pair of shoes for yourself.
Okay, I will definitely.
Or just grab a plastic baggie, make it look like an ice cream cone, fill it with hot cocoa mix, and say, Oprah told you this was all that you had to give, that this was your favorite thing. And I hope everybody else is coming down from your tryptophan from all the turkey eating. And we will be back in the next show with Deb Pierce from Toronto. So until then, stay warm and hang some lights or some holly or put up the menorah or whatever you do for solstice, Kwanzaa, Christmas. It's, you know, Hanukkah. It's all very soon upon us.
Yes.
All very soon.
Take care, everybody.
Take care, Coleman.
Take care.
I see you wink, I see you smile, you're giving me...
Thanks for listening to another Windy City Queercast. This program is brought to you in part by Bud Light. Bud Light keeps it coming. Broadway in Chicago. For the hottest tickets in town, visit BroadwayInChicago.com. And American Airlines, offering exciting GLBT vacations online at aa.com/rainbow. Special thanks to our Queercast family, Kirk Williamson, newscaster, and Di Sturkey, production editor. I'm Amy Matheny, your host. Please comment on our shows at WindyCityQueercast.com and iTunes. The next Queercast is only days away, so don't miss it. Subscribe today. Windy City Queercast. Queer and now.